This episode is brought to you by Harry's. Harry sent me a razor starter kit recently to try, and I put it to use very quickly because I keep myself clean shaven. In fact, I pretty much shave every single day because I have lots of facial hair. It grows back very quickly, and it's also really thick, and it hurts a lot when I shave normally, with a bad razor at least. So I've been using Harry's razors for like a week now. They're very nice. It's a 5-blade razor, and I have to say, it really does effortlessly shave through my normally very annoying facial hair. It doesn't hurt one bit, no tugging, anything like that. And it stayed sharp the entire time as well. I'm very impressed so far. It also has kind of a good weight to it. It's like heavier than normal. I don't know. It's like, it's just got a good weight to it. I really like that. I didn't know I liked it before, but now I know I like it. I also really liked the shaving cream just because it smells really good. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by questionable shaving products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of other big brands. Harry's has a customizable delivery option for scheduled refills as low as $2, half of what you pay from other big brands. Don't settle for the status quo. Blaze your own trail with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/otherworld. That's harrys.com/otherworld for a $3 trial set. Welcome to Otherworld. I'm your host, Jack Wagner. I'm really excited about this episode. It was one of the first stories I really wanted to do for this show when I began first coming up with the idea for Otherworld. So I've been thinking about it for a long time and trying to get the storyteller to talk about it for a long time. This episode is a really important one to me because I think it's going to touch on some themes that will serve as a big step forward for certain people in opening their mind to these topics, or at least providing a good framework for people to how to look at the paranormal and to interpret these stories. Everyone's had good or bad times in their life, but generally speaking, most people are fortunate enough to never have to go through a real horrible tragedy. They don't have to experience that ever. I mean, the type of thing that's so bad or hard that your friends can't even give you advice about it. They can't even pretend to understand how you feel. The type of thing that they don't make books about how to get through. That type of bad. Most people just don't have to go through something like that, thankfully. They never have anything like that happen to them. But anyone who has gone through something like that knows how it changes you. It changes how you look at everything, and it makes you realize how fragile life is, and how it can all really fall apart in an instant and take you to a place that there's no fully going back from. When you go through that, it's not that it makes it easier to believe in the paranormal. I think it's just that it makes you realize how little we all know, and how lots of us just walk around as if we know everything. And when you go through something like that, it kind of changes the way you look at people. And you start to recognize that type of person and how foolish that type of person really is. The person that thinks they know everything. Because you really don't. You really don't. Even if you are just talking about what's going to happen to you next. What I'm trying to say is, everyone's reality and lived experience is very different. You never know what somebody else has gone through or how little you've gone through yet yourself. This story is from a person who's gone through a lot. I want to thank him for telling me this story because I know it's something that's very difficult to talk about. I think you guys are going to really like this story. It's not a scary one, but it's a very powerful one, and I'm very grateful to have it. This episode is called My Brother's Keeper. It's episode 8. And you're listening to Otherworld.
Hello?
It's Bobby?
Yes, it is.
You still rolling?
Yeah, let us know when you're ready.
Okay, hey,
That's a feel for asking questions.
Can you just tell me?
Samoa in the Pacific Islands can be creepy, superstitious.
This is a story about...
It just, like, comes out like that.
I'm John, and this happened when I was 13. I had older brother, my older brother, Andy. Like, he was someone that I looked up to like my whole life, and he was really cool. Like, we would always do things together, and he was 18, and I was 13, so there was a 5-year difference. But growing up, you know, as a young kid, I always thought he was, you know, super cool, you know, and even from the time I was a real little kid, he kind of never got annoyed with me. Like, he always kind of included me under his wing. Like, he would bring me on dates, like first dates that he was going on with girls, and, you know, telling them that my mom like made him take me. But we had worked out a code, and so if he didn't like the date or wasn't going well, like, I would cause, you know, trouble for him to be like, oh, you know, I have to take him home, I'm sorry. But he's also the one that kind of just really got me into music. You know, growing up with, you know, an older brother like that, you know, was great. We would do kind of like weekly movie nights, especially like once, you know, we got older and he got in high school in his senior year. You know, he was really busy, so we didn't hang out as much, but he made sure that, you know, once a week, you know, we would, you know, go do something together. And so it was often movies. This happened back, I was 13, so 97. Me and him were on our way to a movie, and we kind of got into a car accident, hit by a drunk driver. And then, you know, next thing I remember is waking up in the hospital. I remember a lot of confusion, not knowing where I was. It was kind of like, you know, waking up in that fight or flight mode. From what I was told, the first time I woke up, they had to sedate me right away just because, you know, I was panicking. And then, you know, next time it was just kind of, you know, waking up, but just really groggy, confused. And this was like the first time I woke up was about like 2 or 3 days after the accident. You know, in that day, like, I have little kind of like bursts of memory. Like, I just, you know, remember kind of, you know, seeing people I didn't know come in, people coming in and talking to me, but just, you know, my memory of them talking to me is kind of like the Charlie Brown, like, teachers, where it was just kind of, you know, sounds like a, you know, trombone, where I see them talking but cannot understand anything they're saying. I feel worn out, like, I'm confused, I'm hurt, like, I'm just going to close my eyes, you know, and then, you know, when I wake up, like, it'll be completely different. Like, you know, this is just a dream, like, you know, let me sleep and, you know, wake up again and everything will be fine type thinking. I knew I was injured, you know, I felt pain. I was, you know, laying down, I wasn't, like, propped up, so it wasn't, like, look down and see. So I had pain in my leg. I didn't think that it was gone because I could still feel it. You know, it felt, you know, I had a cast on my other leg, but, you know, they felt pretty similar, like, in terms of pain level. To me, until they said something, I didn't realize it, you know. And then I think it was like the doctor that was kind of, you know, was explaining kind of my injuries and how serious they were and having to amputate. And, you know, that was, I think, when it kind of really started kind of sinking in, like, wait, what? And then finding out that, oh, what I'm feeling, like, that's just, you know, that's what's called phantom pain. Like, you know, even though it feels like the leg's there, like, it's not. It's just, you know, my brain, you know, playing tricks and, you know, the nerves not knowing how to handle it and kind of sending different signals to the brain. You know, when I did, you know, realize it and found out, that was super overwhelming. And that's probably one of the first times that, you know, I kind of really just freaked out and just couldn't handle things. And they had to sedate me because, you know, heart rate was going up and, you know, I was just kind of panicking. You know, as a kid, you know, I played, you know, soccer on the travel soccer teams and, you know, was pretty active. So, you know, finding out that, you know, I lost my leg, it was just like, well, what's going to happen now? Like, I can't do what I used to do. So, yeah, that was an adjustment. You know, this isn't a dream. Like, this is real. You know, this is something that's actually happening. So when I woke up that first night, like, I knew it was kind of, you know, more of night because things were kind of dark. The lights were lower, but it was a lot quieter, which was nice. You know, things you know, were a little better to allow me to just kind of, you know, come to terms and think about, like, everything going on. And when I was doing that, I looked over and saw Andy sitting next to me. And, you know, that made me feel even more at ease, knowing that he was there and, you know, time thinking that, oh, everything's going to be okay. Like, Andy's here. You know, he's, you know, with him around, like, I'm definitely going to, you know, get through this all. You know, he's always been the person who I looked up to. So, you know, he'll help me through all this. You know, this is just, you know, one hump in life to get over. And so, you know, I saw him there and turned and looked at him, and, you know, he looked at me, and, you know, he was just like, you know, I know you're scared, but, you know, everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be all right. And, you know, I kind of repeated that to myself, and, you know, we just kind of, I don't remember fully everything we talked about, but, you know, I know it was just kind of like general chit-chat, just kind of calming, and, you know, him sitting down, you know, sitting there in, you know, t-shirt and shorts. And it was the first time I really felt at ease, and first time I really thought to myself, well, maybe things are kind of going to be okay. The next day, like, my parents were in the hospital visiting. You know, Andy is probably at school, you know, because my sister wasn't around, you know, my youngest sister. So I thought, oh, they're probably at school. And so it was just a lot of kind of, you know, general talk with my parents. It was harder with my mom around because, you know, my mom was kind of, you know, crying and, you know, freaking out. And so that was just kind of giving me anxiety too. So I just remember just wanting more to kind of be by myself. There was just that little, like, bitter thought, like, I'm the one that's going through this. Like, why are you taking this so hard? Like, with my mom's kind of reaction to everything. And so I remember, like, just wanting to be more kind of alone. And they were probably there for most of the day. So it was probably around dinner time that they left. And then again, that night, when I woke up, middle of the night, Andy was there. And, you know, he was wearing the same outfit. But again, it was the same kind of chat that, you know, him telling me, you know, everything's going to be fine. Like, everything's going to be okay. You know, you'll get through this. Like, you know, you're strong. I remember, you know, asking him, you know, is he okay? You know, what exactly happened in the accident? You know, how did he kind of make it out, you know, and him just giving general, like, just real general answers, you know, not really answering the question, you know, when asking him, like, how he's doing, you know, him saying that, you know, he's just more concerned with how I'm doing. I think I might have asked him, like, you know, where he was that day, you know, why he, you know, hadn't come in, you know, to visit later, why he's only been coming in at night to visit. Yeah, the questions were never answered. It was just the kind of, his answers were dancing around, and kind of coming back to him talking about just wanting to make sure I'm okay. After, you know, we talked a bit, you know, just kind of laying there, you know, in, like, comfortable silence and, you know, falling asleep, you know, waking up that next day later, it was probably around lunchtime that my parents came in again and asking them, like, oh, why hasn't Andy been visiting with you? Like, and when I first asked that, like, they just kind of looked at each other but didn't say anything. And I was just like, well, you know, why has he been coming at night? Like, you know, why can't you all come in and visit together instead of separately? And, you know, that's when my dad kind of, you know, was just like, wait, what did you say? Like, what are you talking about? You know, and I explained about Andy coming at night, you know, and talking to me. And I wish, like, he could come during, you know, the day with my parents. And that's when, you know, my mom kind of broke down. And that's when, you know, my dad had said, like, you know, no, like, that's not possible. Like, Andy died in the accident. Like, that's why he hasn't been here. And, you know, that's when things just, to me, in my mind, got just so super confusing. It's just like, well, no, like, that's not true. Like, he's been here visiting. Like, we've talked. And I just kind of, you know, broke down. Like, I was kind of panicking. Like, that was the second time that I really had to be sedated. You know, just because it was just way too much and so overwhelming. And so that's, you know, the next time I really remember is kind of the day after that. You know, my dad, you know, it was just my dad visiting. My mom wasn't there. And, you know, he had talked to me and, you know, explained more about what happened and showed me newspaper, you know, talking about how, like, Andy had passed away. It just wasn't kind of clicking. Like, I, you know, saw that and thought, okay. But then it was just like, but no, he was visiting me. And so it was just like, you know, part of me accepted it, but then part of me didn't. Because it's just like, I know what I experienced, and I know that I talked to him, but, you know, realizing that, well, the things that we talked about and the things that he'd said and that mantra that he would always tell me, like, you know, that kind of helped me go on and thinking, like, well, I got this second chance. Like, I need to kind of push through what's happening. You know, I need to get through this, you know, so I can live for myself, but then also make Andy proud. Because that's what he would want me to do. Like, he wouldn't want me just to, you know, sit and dwell and just be unhappy about life. Because that's what he would pretty much say. Like, everything's going to be fine. Like, everything's going to be okay. Like, you can do this. So just remembering that is kind of what helps set the pace for kind of, like, moving forward and kind of getting through it all. You know, after that, it was just a lot of... I was probably in the hospital a total of, like, 2 months, 2.5 months. But it was just a lot of kind of, you know, healing and just kind of, you know, mentally moving forward. And then, you know, there's a lot of kind of physical therapy. And, you know, that's when the mantra really kind of came back with Andy's words about kind of when doing physical therapy, you know, everything's going to be fine, you know, just kind of keep going. Nowadays, like, there's so much more visibility with, you know, people who are disabled or amputees. Whereas, you know, back then, like, you know, for the longest time, I didn't know anyone else that was like me, you know, missing a limb. Like, so it was definitely, like, hard because I didn't have anyone that I could be like, oh, you know, they know how I'm feeling. You know, they know what I'm going through. You know, when I have told a few people, you know, people often say, well, you know, you did have a head injury. So, you know, and that it was, you know, your imagination or just, you know, your consciousness trying to kind of cope with what was going on. But so it's always been kind of all these different kind of answers, kind of, you know, that people have used to try and explain, you know, when I've told them about, I know what happened to me. Like, you know, this is my experience. Like, you know, part of my mind says, like, you trying to take that away from me, you know, it's just like you trying to kind of take that, like, hope, you know, and those words that you would say to me at night that I kind of made my kind of philosophy, like, you know, you're trying to take that away. Like, you know, I thought you were a friend type thing, you know, and I know they don't mean it in that way, you know, but sometimes it's hard not to take it that way. I realized that, you know, he was kind of giving me what I needed when I needed it. So in a way, like, he was always there and always with me, you know, when I would just kind of think back on that phrase and that mantra that kind of became my mantra. Yeah, I mean, there were times where, you know, I would swear that I would see, you know, at different moments, different times, like, where I would swear I would see him kind of, like, you know, in the distance, but knowing, like, oh, you know, that's just someone who looked like him, or, you know, that's just, you know, my imagination, you know, but it wasn't like, oh, he's there, you know, he's around. It was just kind of little moments where it's just kind of like, in a way, I think it might have been like little reminders that, hey, you know, I'm still around, you're not in this alone.
All right, Jack here. I just thought I'd jump in and talk for a second because even though I love this story, it's amazing. That part that he just talked about really frustrates me when he mentioned these people that he would tell about this experience. He'd tell them about the experience and their first instinct is to question it or say that it's not real. That is so weird to me. And I think it's a very, it's a weird reaction. And I think it's an arrogant reaction. These people know nothing about this person or what he's gone through. He's gone through so much more than they could ever even imagine. Probably more than they'll ever even go through in their life. And it's so strange to immediately question this person's lived experience, let alone say that it's not real. Because at a certain point, how would you even define that? Because it sounds pretty real to me. It sounds actually probably one of the most real things that's ever happened to John, if I had to take a guess. And, you know, he lost his leg. He lost his own brother, and his family got torn apart. And he had this amazing experience and an opportunity to see his brother a couple more times. I mean, it's so weird to be a person that, like, your first instinct is to try to take that away from him in some way. It's very weird. And there are people like that. And I think part of the reason I'm doing this show is to try to get rid of that instinct. Even if you're skeptical about something, you know, you could definitely keep that to yourself. Because sometimes it's a really stupid thought. It's, you sound like an idiot. I've talked to John at length about this. And, you know, he's talked to me about the times in the hospital that were very blurry to him and confusing. And then, of course, the times where he would wake up and be very clear-headed, including the times that he visited his parents during the day. And he said that these visits with Andy were very much clear-headed waking experiences. He would wake up very lucid, and this would happen. He knows it's real. That no part of him thinks this was some kind of weird dream. But you know what? Even if it was, who cares? I don't think it matters. It's a person's lived experience, and this is a very important one to him. So I just wanted to drive that point home. I mean, this is an amazing, amazing story, but I think another important point of it is that I think we really need to adjust the way we look at people's lived experience, and especially the way people are very, very quick to give their uninvited personal opinions about it. So I'm going to let John continue on with the story, but I just wanted to say that. Okay, we have to take a quick break, but we will be right back. I used to be really bad at keeping track of my finances. A very stupid part of me believed that if I just don't look at my bank accounts and my credit card statements, the money will all still be there, even if I spent it on stupid stuff that month. Well, that's not how it works. I learned the hard way. It's quite the opposite. Usually, when I finally did look, I'd notice that there was some subscription I'd been paying for that I forgot to cancel, or I got overcharged for something and it's too late to fix. But now I use Rocket Money to keep track of all of that for me, so I don't have to worry. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you could grow your savings. Rocket Money finds all of your bills and subscriptions for you, lays them out, and gives you the option to cancel them automatically, or it can negotiate a lower price for you. I recently tested this out on my internet bill, and they were able to negotiate a lower price for me. I saved like $300 doing this. If you're like me and you get scared checking your accounts, Rocket Money might be your savior. It's nice having everything in one place and under control. I promise you're going to be very happy once you finally do it. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/otherworld. That's rocketmoney.com/otherworld. Hey, Otherworld listeners. I'm excited to tell you about a show that I love and I think you're going to love as well. It's called Sophia with an F, starring Sophia Franklin. This show is about as different from Otherworld as a show could possibly be, which is why I think many people were very, very shocked when I got invited on as a guest around Halloween. It was really the crossover that nobody expected. I'll never forget the day my episode came out and every single one of my college-age cousins texted me all at the same time, very confused, but also very excited. It was nice to hear from all of them, though, and finally get some respect. I had a great time on the show. Sophia is really down to earth, which is why I think her interviews are so good. We talked about Otherworld, the paranormal, getting into this whole thing unexpectedly, as I did, and a lot of other stuff that I think normally does not get discussed on Sophia with an F. Normally in the show, Sophia Franklin goes deep on sex, life, mental health, relationships, and everything in between. You could get Sophia all to yourself every Monday for solo mini episodes and every Thursday with her ride or die best friends, experts, and some famous guests on a host of other topics, topics that are not safe for the dinner table, from foursomes and sugar daddies to wild sexcapades and tips for keeping things fresh in the bedroom. It's raw and laugh out loud funny, no borders and no filters. My personal favorite is the episode with Waka Flocka Flame, if you want somewhere to start. Listen to and follow Sophia with an F on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, getting out of the hospital definitely made it seem a lot more real. You know, because now it's just like, oh, you're in the real world, you know, trying to get back to how things were. It was definitely kind of more of an adjustment and became more real, you know, moving around the real world and not just, you know, the hospital where, especially with like physical therapy, they make things, you know, easier and more comfortable for you. So I think that's when, you know, the full and real adjustment to everything kind of started. And then the family had moved to Iowa. It was like a way to kind of start over. In a way, like, that was good because I didn't have, you know, people who knew me my whole life. And now, you know, after the accident, you know, seeing me different, you know, moving to Iowa, you know, people just seeing me how I was then and not knowing everything and pitying or asking questions, or people who didn't quite know about the accident asking things like, you know, how my brother's doing, you know. So in a way, it was kind of nice to have that fresh start. I always felt that he must be watching over me, you know. Just because I couldn't see him doesn't mean he isn't around. So I was kind of felt that, you know, no matter what, you know, he was still there for me. You know, having kind of, you know, those down moments or, you know, depression about anything, you know, I always kind of used the idea and, you know, his memory as kind of strength to kind of pick me back up again. I got a second chance at life. And so it's just like, I want to live it to the fullest for me, but also for him. So years later, I was engaged to this girl, and she dealt with bipolar. And I didn't realize at the time, but she had gone off her meds. I had been at work all day and had come home and found her just sitting on the couch. TV was on, but volume down. You know, I could tell that something was kind of on her mind. You know, something was going on. And, you know, she was bipolar. And so I thought, you know, oh, you know, she must be kind of dealing with, you know, a downward turn in terms of her feelings. And so, you know, I had asked her what was going on. And she had told me that earlier in the day, she, when going to the gas station, just went into a really downward manic episode. And, you know, all she could think about was just walking into traffic. And she said that she went to take a step and then kind of felt someone grab her and pull her back on the sidewalk, and looked around and saw this kid, you know, who was kind of like, you know, a late teen. And she started describing the kid in person. And I was just like, kind of got me thinking, because then the description sounded really familiar. Then when she said the, you know, what he was wearing, you know, a blue t-shirt that said Jinx on it, I was kind of got my blood running cold in a way, because it was just, I felt like I knew who it was that helped her. And so Jinx was the school that me and my brother and also my sister, you know, had gone to when we lived in Philly. And this
took place in Delaware. Like, me and my fiance were living in Delaware at the time. So, you know, the chances of someone else wearing a Jenks shirt, I think, would be very slim. So, she had said that, you know, she went, you know, and turned around to say thanks to the person, and the person wasn't there anymore, and she couldn't see where he went. So, next time we were at my parents' house, you know, we went into the basement, you know, and went through boxes, you know, that had family photos, and found a picture of my brother and showed it to her. And her face just got kind of pale and she got quiet. And she kind of looked and she said that that was who she saw, that, you know, she just couldn't understand, like, how that picture of my brother, who she hadn't seen a picture of before, she got super confused on how that could have been the person who really saved her. My parents' way of dealing with the trauma and everything, I mean, losing a brother was hard. I can't imagine losing a child. But my parents' way of dealing with it was to kind of remove, you know, the family photos that he was in. She had never seen pictures of him because there weren't any pictures up around the house. So when we went into the basement, you know, looking through the boxes to find some of the photos, when I found the photo and showed it to her, it was the first time she had seen a picture of my brother. At the time, just the kind of look of shock on her face when she saw the photo, you know, is what made me believe her. Because I don't think someone can be, like, that good of an actor, you know, in that moment. She, you know, was saying things that, you know, just proves that, you know, he's still here looking out for you, you know, and looking out for those around you, including her now. Philosophically, like, you know, I've gotten to the point where, you know, especially now that it's been, like, you know, 25 years later, where I know that, like, you know, I trust my own experiences. I trust myself. You know, I know myself. Like, I know myself. I know what I saw. You know, I know what I've been through. You know, so if someone, you know, has an issue with me or with anything, you know, like sharing an experience, well, that's their issue. You know, I talk to people who are kind of like, you know, naysayers or just like, oh, that couldn't have happened, or, oh, you must have imagined it. But just trying to kind of diminish accomplishments too, you know. People are always just kind of, you know, gonna often put other people down, you know, or kind of doubt other people just so they can feel better about themselves type thing. And just in, you know, the grand scheme of things, you know, this experience isn't even, like, you know, a big part, you know, of everything. Like, it's something I went through. It's something that helped me. But, you know, in terms of everything I've gone through with life, with kind of losing my leg and just dealing with everything, you know, now doing, you know, my own, you know, working hard to do my own art full time. There's just been so many other, like, bigger things that, in a way, that have happened in my life. So it's just kind of funny that people kind of, in a way, doubt, you know, something that helped me and just kind of a small part when there's bigger things that I've kind of done and, you know, gone through and dealt with that I would think would be more attention grabbing in a way. But yeah, it's, yeah, I don't know. I can honestly say, like, I've never actually sat and thought about, like, you know, what this was. Like, to me, it was just, you know, an experience and something that I had, but I've never actually, like, thought, oh, how did this happen? Or, you know, what was this that was happening? What I went through was a lot. Like, it was stuff that I wouldn't wish on, you know, people I hate, you know, or an enemy. Like, if I didn't have that support, like, I don't know where I would be now, you know, or
if I would be here now. Like, so with people who are kind of skeptical or naysayers, I just kind of remind myself, like, they never went through what I went through. They haven't gone through even anything similar. So, of course, they can't understand it, you know, or kind of empathize with how I feel. So it's just like, I just kind of take comfort in the fact that, like, you know, I went through this, I survived this, like, I was stronger, and I was stronger, you know, in part by what happened.
All right. Thank you, John, so much for telling us that story. I know it was a really difficult one to talk about, so really thank you for telling us that. That was incredible. One of my favorite stories. Not all of these paranormal stories need to be bad or scary. That was a really nice one. Probably some of you needed that after the last few episodes. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And I hope it had some good lessons in there to be learned, because I think the way people react to these topics is not so great sometimes. And part of what I'm doing with this show is to hopefully open people's minds a little bit, or at least help them understand and maybe learn a framework of looking at this stuff, or even just accepting and understanding that people have gone through stuff that you could never understand or never know. Everybody has had a very, very different lived experience. And a lot of the most intense stuff that they've gone through, they're not going to talk about with you. They might not talk about with anybody. It might be something that they keep secret. So it's just worth keeping that in mind when you think about running your mouth about how much you know about somebody else's lived experience. And especially if you're going to talk about their life as if you know about it better than them. So something worth considering when moving through the world and talking to people, especially when it comes to talking to somebody else about their own personal lived experience, and perhaps not invalidating that to the people that you meet. So, with that being said, that brings us to the end of this episode. Once again, I want to thank John for telling us that story, and I also want to officially dedicate this episode to the memory of John's brother, Andy. On behalf of Otherworld, rest in peace, Andy. And thank you, John, so much for telling us that story. My name is Jack Wagner. This episode is called My Brother's Keeper, and you've been listening to Otherworld. Otherworld is executive produced and hosted by myself, Jack Wagner. Our theme song is by Cobra Man. The soundtrack of this episode is by North Americans. Editing and engineering by Theo Schaefer. The artwork for our show is by Cul-de-Sac Studios. Once again, this is an independent show, so please show us your support by subscribing, leaving a 5-star review, and telling your friends. If you want to follow us on social media, we're at OtherworldPod on Twitter and Instagram. Also, if you or somebody you know has experienced something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplained, you could send us your story at stories@otherworldpod.com. Folks, one more thing. If you liked this episode, please help me out by spreading the word. Tell your friends about Otherworld. Leave us a review. It's been helping a lot. The show's been growing, which has been super exciting to see, but still needs to get bigger. So please help me out, and thank you so much for helping me out already.